And that is some Javanese gamelan music. I would like now to welcome Felicia Katz-Harris. She is the curator of Asian and Middle Eastern folk art at the Museum of International Folk Art, and she's curated an exhibition called Dancing Shadows, Epic Tales, Wayang Kulit of Indonesia. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hi, thank you.
Now, Wayang Kulit, do those words mean shadow puppets, or what do those words mean?
They generally refer to shadow puppets. Wayang, in general, refers to performance, and kulit literally means skin, so it refers to the leather from which shadow puppets are made.
So shadow puppetry in Indonesia has a great history. First of all, what does it look like? What are the shadows that, what do people see when they go to a shadow puppet show?
They see a lot. It's a really complex art form. It's a really complex performance. And some of the things that people would see would be a gamelan orchestra, which is a traditional Indonesian orchestra. They would see a puppeteer. They would see shadow puppets. They would see shadows. They'd see lots of people in the audience, too.
And so the puppeteer holds puppets that have a certain look, and then light shines onto a screen?
That's right. There's, in the central performance area, there's a puppeteer. It's one puppeteer sits in front of a screen it's like usually a cotton screen fixed to a frame, usually a wooden frame. And there's a light that hangs from above and behind the puppeteer, so when he holds the shadow puppets up, the light shines through the shadow puppets, which are perforated with hundreds of holes, carved holes, and the light shines through the puppets onto this screen that's in front of him. So if you're standing or sitting behind the puppeteer, you see shadows that reflect off the screen that's in front of him. But if you're on the other side of the screen, which people often refer to as the shadow side of the screen, all you see are these shadows.
And that's the show.
Yes and no, because a performance area is usually set in the middle of this area that people would typically walk around. So in the past, traditionally, people would watch those shadows, but today often people will watch the performance from the puppeteer side because there's a lot of action. There's the puppeteer in action, and then there's also all the gamelan musicians that play and accompany the puppeteer. So there's a lot that they want to see on that side.
What are the performances traditionally about?
The performances traditionally tell the stories of the Ramayana and Mahabharata, which are two epic tales from India. So, I mean, there are other tales that they tell, but the two most common stories that are performed are Ramayana and Mahabharata.
Those are very long. So I saw the Mahabharata movie, and it was multiple DVDs.
Right.
It's very long. So these are actually puppet shows that go through the night.
These are puppet shows that go through the night. Typically, they last about 9 hours in a traditional setting. I mean, there are shortened performances for different types of events, but traditionally and most commonly in the villages, these performances do go all night. But interestingly enough, they don't tell the whole story of Mahabharata in one evening. They're only telling one small episode from that story, actually. And so that's how long those epics are.
Right. And so do they ever have a series that goes over the course of a year where they tell the whole epic?
I not that I know of that there would be, like a Wayang festival series kind of thing. I mean, there might be, but generally the stories, the specific stories that are told might be relevant to an event that the show is being sponsored for. For example, someone might sponsor a Wayang Kulit show for their children's wedding, and so there might be a particular story that tells that talks about a wedding in Mahabharata.
Now, there's also bringing well-being to the community if there's been a problem or even exorcisms.
That's right. That's right. So the puppets, the shadow puppets and the puppeteer are both thought to have special powers. And so if there's something that happens and a community might need some kind of protection, you know, somebody in the community might sponsor a Wayankulit performance for that type of protection.
And so it's a kind of, what would you call it, but in a good way, magic or witchcraft or brujeria or something like that?
Yeah, it's more for protection against, or just offering protection to a community, or I think more commonly, though, it's really celebrating events or commemorating events. So it might be, you know, someone, a birth of a child, or like I said, a wedding, but sometimes even, you know, to commemorate an individual after they've died. So a funeral or, you know, the anniversary of someone's death, there might be a Wayankulit performance to commemorate the memory of that person.
So you've been to these?
I've been to a number of performances set in villages, and one performance that I went to was for Nyewu, which in Javanese culture is the 1,000th day death anniversary of an individual, and that was for Dalang, a puppeteer, and also for the celebration of a wedding. And I was also at a performance that was commissioned by a radio station, so it was broadcast on the radio, and that's something that you see nowadays too.
That's funny that I guess you would hear the voices and the music, but a shadow puppet show, which is so visual.
Oh, I know.
I mean, you wouldn't think it would make the best radio.
Right, right. But it's the music and the puppeteers. Dialogue and song and narration, because there's a lot to shadow puppet theater, a lot more to it than just the shadows or just the puppetry. You know, like I said, there's songs and there's music, and so there's a lot to listen to.
So when you have a 9-hour performance that starts at night and goes all night, it can't be like going to the Lenzik and sitting still. Oh. It's a different kind of atmosphere.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, here in the States, it's, you know, when you go to a movie that's over 2 hours, I think by the end of that movie, we're like, oh, you know, I'm ready
gotta
to
get out of here.
I gotta get out of here. But so yeah, it's a little bit different, and audiences typically will get up and walk around. It's common to see people falling asleep or leaving and then coming back or going off and getting something to eat or drink or, you know, stuff like that. It's a much more casual atmosphere in the audience than Western theater.
And it's very much, I mean, this is the Museum of International Folk Art. It really is a folk art. It's not what one might call high art that you have in the cities. It's something, what, each village has a puppeteer?
Well, there are different puppeteers in different areas, and some puppeteers are very popular, and some are very famous, and then some are smaller scale. So, you know, that definitely differs, you know, by individual and from place to place. But it is a high art. It is considered one of the highest forms of art in Indonesia. But typically, if it's a performance that's set in a village, you know, hundreds of people will show up to watch, and so it's not closed, or it's not by invite only. It's characteristically open to the public. So it really is an art of and for the people. I mean, even though it might be very wealthy people that would sponsor an event, or it could be a very popular or even a famous puppeteer who performs in a village setting, and, you know, there's access to the villagers. So it is a folk art in that sense.
Indonesia is a vast country with a lot of different cultures and even languages.
Right.
So when we talk about Indonesian shadow puppetry, is that does it differ a whole lot from place to place?
It does. And in some places, wayang takes completely different forms. And it's not even a shadow puppet, but perhaps it's some form of dance or something like that. But the exhibit really focuses on the central Javanese form of wayang, which is wayang kulit, but it is different in different places. And also, the Central Javanese form of wayang is probably the most widely recognized form of wayang. So it's become quite popular, and you might find Central Javanese wayang kulit performance in places outside of Java. So like maybe Sumatra or, you know, just different places, maybe West Java, they're doing, maybe there's a Central Javanese puppeteer that would have traveled to do a performance there.
So let's talk about the symbolism. There's three acts in each of these performances that symbolize the three stages of life, youth, maturity, and old age.
That's right. So if a wayang kulit performance goes, say, 8-9 hours, goes through the night, you know, you would think that there's a lot of differentiation between, you know, all the stories, but, you know, typically there's a set way in which the stories unfold, and for example, there would be three acts in every performance, and generally, the first act would represent youth. For example, it would be the hero learning about a problem, and then the second act is his, you know, middle age or that struggle with taking the right path. So he finds out he has a problem, and then or there's a problem, and then he seeks to resolve that problem. So during that second act is about how he goes about doing that, and then the third act, which represents old age or like the like an enlightenment or the attainment of inner peace, the problem is resolved. And so, yeah, the acts actually symbolize different stages of life.
And there's different music that goes with each one.
Right. Mm-hmm. And in fact, each act is refers to the different modes of music that are played in those different acts. So they're very closely related, the music and the acts.
So there really is a moral tale dimension to this. The puppeteer as teacher, the story as a moral story. And as many Eastern stories are, they're kind of ambiguous about the lines between good and evil.
That's right. And that's one of the main messages, actually, in Wayang Kulit, is there is no black and white.
Mm-hmm. Which is interesting. I think, to absorb as Americans and as people from especially a culture that tries to oversimplify things and make everybody into good or evil.
Right. And some of the characters, some of the specific characters in these stories are just really great examples of human nature. You know, you can be a good person and make mistakes, and that could greatly impact your life and the life of those you love, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're bad if your intentions are good, or you can have bad intentions and do good things by accident, you know. So,
right.
But things don't really fit into these neat categories, and it's like life, you know, so there is no black and white.
We're talking to Felicia Katz-Harris, who is with the Museum of International Folk Art, about the exhibition Dancing Shadows, Epic Tales, Wayang Kulit of Indonesia, which is opening this coming Sunday afternoon. So the puppets, the shadow puppets in themselves, are these extraordinarily delicate, beautiful objects that weren't necessarily intended as museum objects or works of art in themselves, but you are displaying them so that we can look at them closely.
That's right. We have presented the Wayang Kulit in different ways. We're looking at different aspects of Wayang Kulit in the exhibit. And when you come into the gallery, the first aspect that is presented that the audience can explore is the performance aspect, because that's one of the most important aspects to the art form. And we filmed a demonstration performance. It wasn't an actual performance set in a village, but it was a demonstration that a puppeteer did at his home in Eremoko, which is in Central Java in Wonogiri District. And we filmed this performance from both sides of the screen. So simultaneously you see the puppeteer in action, and then you see on the other side of the screen the shadows, and we've simulated that for the gallery. So in the gallery we have a screen, and on both sides we have different sides of the performance.
Oh, yeah. Very interesting. So you actually, the viewer has to walk from one side to the other as if it were a real screen?
That's right. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it worked out pretty well. David Rohr is our creative director, and he was able to figure out how to sync these two videos together so that you can see the sort of simultaneous puppeteer and shadow side, you know, as you walk around. So it should work out really well.
So what are they actually made of, and how do they carve them so very delicately?
They're made from water buffalo hide, and they are punched with these long tools, sort of like an awl, but they have specially shaped cutting edges, which actually they only come in two shapes, flat and curved, but they come in different sizes. And the artist will cuts a piece of the water buffalo hide, and he scratches an outline of the puppet figure onto the hide, and then he follows that outline that he's scratched with these tools, and one hole at a time he punches these holes using these nail or these awls with a mallet. So he's punching it one hole at a time, and it's a very time-consuming process. It's fascinating to watch. And then once all the perforations are cut into the figure, then another artist, usually they're different artists, would paint the figure in layers of colors, and then they're embellished with a gold or bronze leaf for some of the finer pieces. And in others, you know, other types of pieces might just be gold paint or bronze-colored paint.
And sometimes the color symbolizes the type of character that you're looking at.
Yeah, there are, you know, a certain number of facial colors, and so they, you know, depending on what color a character's face is, it gives you a clue to their personality, or sometimes not really personality as much as mood, you know. So there might be a character with a black face, and that would represent his strength or his strength of character, whereas someone with a red colored face might show that he's angry, or he might be a particularly violent character.
So how much has this changed? I mean, in the 20th century, with so many cultures contacting one another, you have other influences coming into what was theretofore traditionally very, very, what do you call it, traditional, non-changing kind of scripts and ways of doing things.
Yeah, well, there's been a lot of changes, I think, over the years. And when I say years, I mean centuries. So, you know, I think it's part of the nature of Wayang to change throughout time. It's not, you know, just like culture is not fixed, neither is art or tradition. So, I mean, there have been, in the past, say, 20, 30 years, there have been a number of changes, like one of, I think, the biggest or the most noticeable changes is in the music. So whereas, you know, in the past it might have been strictly traditional Javanese gamelan music, today, like, some puppeteers throw a drum kit into the mix, or
right,
keyboards, or, you know, instead of, you know, instead of it being all traditional music, there might be certain scenes where they'll incorporate, like, Indonesian pop music. Like dangdut or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, or rock or pop.
And traditionally, they have used oil lamps.
Mm-hmm. That's right. In the past, they would use these oil lamps, which would have a real flame that would be the light source for the shadows. But typically, they were very hot to work under, and random sparks would fly, and the puppeteer would get burned, and the puppets would get burned, and every now and then. And so, the puppeteers in Java stopped using them a number of years ago, probably in the mid-century, and today they use an electric lamp, an electric light bulb, although in Bali and in certain places in Java, they will still use the oil lamp.
So is this something that you find all the generations of a family at the same time, the kids and parents and grandparents and so on?
Yeah, yeah. And I think it speaks to different generations in different ways, or a particularly talented puppeteer would be able to speak to the different generations in different ways over the course of a performance. Although some of the puppeteers today, a lot of contemporary ones or cutting-edge puppeteers, will really mix things up, and he'll like do things that are really different to get the younger generations more interested in wayang, because a lot of people feel that the younger generations are starting to lose interest because they have TV and internet and movies and all that kind of stuff. But some of these popular contemporary puppeteers are able to mix things into their performance that really attract the younger generations.
I imagine that both the craft side of it and the performance side of it are handed down in a kind of apprentice system. Is that how it works?
Yeah, people learn from previous generations, like say for puppeteering or for and also artists as well. They might learn from their families or apprentice with a master. But a lot of puppeteers today will enhance their training by going to an art school that offers puppeteering. You can get a degree in puppeteering in some of the most famous art schools in Java.
So you actually got to go and select the pieces that you wanted for this show, or did the Folk Art Museum have some of them already?
The Folk Art Museum had some already, and as I got further and further into the research, I realized that what we had was, an interesting collection of pieces from different places in Java. So, for example, we have a really interesting collection from East Java and some interesting pieces from the north coast of Java. But what we were focusing on in the exhibit was the Central Javanese art form. And so what we did was, when I went to Indonesia, I was able to acquire a full set from a puppeteer, with special support from the International Folk Art Foundation. So they allowed us to purchase this extraordinary set, and the set came from a popular Dalang is a puppeteer in Solo, which is a city in Central Java, and his name is Ki Purbo Asmoro, and he had put this collection together over the course of 20 years. And he collected from other Dalang in Central Java or families of deceased Dalang. So there's really a rich performance history. And he also designed a number of pieces in this set, which he had commissioned by pretty well-known makers. So there's a lot of history that comes with this set.
So here in Santa Fe at the Museum of International Folk Art, on the opening, which is this coming Sunday from 1 to 4 in the afternoon, there's going to be music by Gamelan Encantada. That is such a great cultural mix right there.
Yeah, yeah. They're based in Albuquerque.
Mm-hmm. And they play Javanese gamelan.
They do. Mm-hmm.
And are there going to be... is there going to be any actual shadow puppet performance?
We hope so. Not at the opening, but we hope during the course of the exhibition we'll be able to have performances at the museum. We're still looking into that.
And people will be able to make their own shadow puppets.
That's right.
I love that you have all those do-it-yourself stations at the Museum of International Folk Art. You really get to play with the materials.
Yes, and this exhibit actually has a lot of hands-on activities to offer and a lot of educational components like that. We have some gamelan instruments that will be set up in the gallery. Well, we have a gamelan that will be on display, but that's not a hands-on collection. But we will have individual gamelan instruments for the audience to play. And
would there be anybody showing them how to do it? Or
no, but we have in the exhibition there's interactive software that allows people to look at instruments and select an instrument, and then you see a video come up of a musician playing, and that musician is Professor Sumarsam from Wesleyan University. He's one of the leading gamelan specialists in the country, and Wesleyan University provided us with video for that computer interactive program. So although you won't have someone showing you how to play the gamelan instruments in the gallery, if you want to find out how to play, you can look it up in the interactive software.
Felicia Katz-Harris is the curator of Asian and Middle Eastern folk art at the Museum of International Folk Art, and once again, the exhibition Dancing Shadows, Epic Tales, the Wayang Kulit of Indonesia opens this Sunday, March 8th from 1 to 4. Thank you so much for being with
us. Thank you. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. Thank you to Nick Appalucci for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, the Jazz Experience. Broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, my name is Mary Charlotte. We'll see you tomorrow. Ciao.